Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, helping home buyers and sellers in Middle Tennessee for 20 years. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Nick Keiser here with you on this Monday morning. We are scheduled to be joined shortly by Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. We're efforting him, so we'll get in touch with him shortly.
Wake up, Sparks.
Let's go, Sparksy. What are we doing?
He should be tired, though.
He should be.
He's been churning it out, man. He's been churning it out.
So, Joe, the NCAA findings for Tennessee come out shortly after our show went off the air on Friday, which is kind of par for the course. But had a lot of people tweeting about that on Friday. Appreciate that. But no bowl ban for Tennessee, which we talked about. No postseason ban for the Vols. They did get an $8 million fine that went along with this, and some scholarship reductions, 28 to be exact. Now, they've already self-imposed 16 of those, so only 12 scholarship reductions over the next few years here for them to deal with. I think based on some reporting around this and from some comments that I've seen, Josh Heupel probably pretty happy to get this stuff behind him and move ahead now with Tennessee and the stuff with the NCAA, but there has been a lot of interesting stuff that Adam Sparks specifically has come out with at the Knoxville News Sentinel over the weekend regarding Jeremy Pruitt, some of the conversations that have come out, some of the text messages, some of the emails with Philip Fulmer that have come out through all this as well, which has been pretty interesting. So what have you made of this whole Tennessee saga that's come out over the weekend and the punishment from the NCAA, including no postseason ban for the Vols, the exemplary cooperation quote coming up over and over again as well over the weekend?
Yeah, a lot. There's a lot to unpack and a lot of great work by Adam in particular. You mentioned, I mean, what was your favorite of all those?
I think Fulmer somewhat having no idea what was going on, or at least acting like it,
yeah,
was amazing.
And of course he had even though he was trying to, you know, keep Jeremy Pruitt from getting fired, you know, saying, oh, I'm seeing progress. He still did have a nice list of possibilities, including Alex French.
Yeah, Alex French. And there was the, Donnie Plowman he was explaining to of like, well, you know, none of our offensive linemen can bench press enough. Like with this situation that they took over, it was just bad.
Everybody's still sad about the loss of Vanderbilt.
The Vanderbilt loss was devastating, and none of our offensive linemen can bench press enough at this point. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Now, according to Sparks' piece, that like he wrote that up, it was kind of like notes, and then he sent it to like his administrative assistant.
And I don't know that it ever got
to her. Yeah. So maybe that's good. But yeah, that was good. There was, you know, the text messages. I mean, some of the stuff in all of this is amazing, and also like, we've talked about this before, but like I went through and read the 127-page report, and my eyes were almost bleeding after it was done. But it's like there's just so much. Yeah, it's a blatant cheating. It's terribly sloppy cheating. All that stuff, you know. Also, it's like, why do we care?
Yeah.
Like I just, it seems so weird to even care about this stuff anymore. And it's kind of saying goodbye to that. I personally think it's total BS. The NCAA, the way they wrote this and talked about it and made it seem like, oh, you were going to get a bowl. I mean, they changed their constitution, and I don't think anyone's getting bowl bans anymore. And I don't think they were going to get one. And by the way, another good spark story through using Open Records, the AG basically sent a threatening letter to the NCAA as well in that regard. I don't think they were ever in real danger of getting, but it, of course it's like, this is, you should have been this, and only because of your exemplary cooperation did we decide to spare you. I call total BS on that.
Oh, I do. There was the conversation on Friday when this first came out of the, like, should Tennessee have been as cooperative as they were? So they just fired Jeremy Pruitt, just paid him based on, like, you know, you end up getting an $8 million fine. And what was his buyout at that point? Like $13 million? 13.5?
12.6.
12.6.
12.6.
So would you have been better off just firing him and then just going quietly into the night that way? I don't know, but obviously that's not the route that they chose to go with Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, that got Ubbin tweeted something like that, and then Vol Twitter got all over
him. He did.
And here's the thing. This is where I think some people are misunderstanding this situation. Like, the NCAA was not going to investigate Tennessee. Now, look, if you want to say, hey, if Dante Plumman gets information, what is Dante Plumman? What is the chancellor supposed to do? And I suppose that's true. I do think that sometimes university administrators are just so isolated from how athletics works,
yeah,
especially in the SEC, that maybe they are stunned by some of these revelations. And it's like, well, of course we have to do something. But if Tennessee didn't do an incredible job of investigating Tennessee, I mean, they absolutely blew it up.
They did.
Then, like, this stuff, none of this stuff comes to light. Like, it just, so however it came about, it came about. But if you just fired him, you know, with not for cause, and paid his buyout, you paid $12.6 million. I'm not saying these scholarship reductions are devastating, or these scholarship or these recruiting limitations are terrible, but you're still talking about 2 years plus of this hanging over your program, having to deal with it in recruiting. They recruited well still.
They did.
But what if the same hires were made, Danny White, Josh Heupel, and this was over and this is nothing, and they just went, would things be even better now? I don't know. I mean, he's gone 18-8. He's way exceeded expectations. But they, like, even moving forward, like, they do have some limitations that other programs don't have that could hurt you. Yes, you can make it up with NIL, and that probably will be the case in some instances. Like, you're fine. Overall, he ended up in a good place. I'm not, but I think it could have been a little bit better place. The last couple of years could have been easier.
I got a texter, and this was one that I left out. Niedermeyer making over $300,000 and still having a bank account with his parents to, quote, hide his lifestyle from them was something. That was the excuse that he gave, that is for sure.
That's my favorite Spark story. And, again, that was largely, again, open records.
Yeah.
I mean, the dude basically told that, and his NCAA investigators, that he's like John Travolta in 1977. You know, sorry, man, I got Saturday Night Fever. I got to go out every night. I mean, come on, dude. Yeah, I just have
I don't
to
want
get...
my parents to see what's going on. Got to stay on their bank account.
It's just
30 years old.
Absolutely amazing.
Lengths that some of these people will go to try to bend their way out of this is just funny to me.
Right. And again, it's just like, and this is where, you know, a 5-year show cause for him, he's done.
Yeah. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt, 6 years, he's done.
And it's just like, again, I want to go. This is what I wrote this to The Athletic today. I want to, if I could fly on the wall anything, it would be the people who worked with those guys at Georgia and Alabama.
Yeah.
When they see all this stuff, is it, holy crap, did they really do that? Or is it, yeah, that's the same stuff we did. We just didn't investigate ourselves as a school.
Right.
You know, now I don't think anybody could argue this isn't sloppy. It was crazy sloppy. And it was like young people out of college handling a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
But again, Jeremy Pruitt was that guy for Nick Saban. Nick Saban's first three teams, Jeremy Pruitt was his, you know, personnel director or whatever the title was. Like, that was his job, doing stuff like this. And when I say stuff like this, I'm just saying, hey, you know, we're arranging visits and all that type of stuff. So, like, wouldn't Jeremy Pruitt have, like, set it up the same way that he grew up in at these other programs?
I mean, you would think so. I saw this tweet from David Ubbin over the weekend. He said, as one of the interviews with someone close to him was ending, and he's talking about he went to do this five-part profile on Jeremy Pruitt back in 2018. He said, as one of his interviews with somebody close to him was ending, and we were about to go our separate ways, we were idly chatting, he laughs and says, let me tell you something. In 5 years, he's either going to have him in the playoff or on probation. That was in July of 2018. That's what David Ubbin had to say over the weekend. And here we are.
And he didn't have him in the playoff.
He did not have him in the playoff. I guess Tennessee
didn't get to 5 years either.
He didn't either. But Tennessee technically under a 5-year probation now, too. I don't know if that really means anything. But
yeah.
They're under a probation.
What a saga. I'm just saying, man, like, Jeremy Pruitt, I kind of feel bad for him.
He's done, right? I mean, it's a 6-year show cause.
Right. So for people who don't know, show cause means that basically, like, you have to show the NCAA why you shouldn't get sanctioned if you hire someone.
Right.
But the thing with his show cause is it comes automatically with
1 year suspension.
With a 1 year suspension. He's probably, yeah. But you know what? Saban should get him in for, like, the the Butch intern job and take the year suspension and let him back in. Why not? And why not? The guy can coach football. He was a good D coordinator. Why would you have him as your D coordinator if he can't coach football at all?
Recruiting was good.
Good. I mean, like all these other, you know, these other programs, they're all fine. I get it. Like if you get popped, you get popped. But people are acting like Jeremy Pruitt is some renegade in this league. Yeah, I mean, he's just doing what he was shown.
We'll take more of your thoughts on this. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Your thoughts on Tennessee, their NCAA punishments. We'll also get your thoughts on the Titans signing DeAndre Hopkins. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. And we go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. Sorry I'm a little tardy.
It's all good, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us.
What do you got now? You got like Brady Hoke sending in all caps texts about, I think I can lead this investigation.
I'll take it if it'll come. Week and weekend. Started this week. This thing has gone in about 10 different directions. I think we couldn't quite predict.
Yeah, we were just talking to Adam about a lot of your work that you've done over the weekend. Let's just start on the Tennessee front. So you get the $8 million fine, no postseason ban, some scholarship reductions. Overall, how do you think Tennessee is feeling in the aftermath of this NCAA findings from over the weekend?
Yeah, if you judge it from back 2020-2021, and say, hey, Tennessee's going to get a 5-year probation and here are the terms. But you'd say, man, they really get hammered. If you look at it through the lens of the last 2.5 years, you think, wow, they won. Because everything that they got, we knew they were going to get. They knew they were going to get. The only thing in question was the postseason ban. So, and the one thing that was up in the air, they didn't get. So I think it's victory in that way. They self-imposed a lot of these things. You know, I've got a piece out that maybe site already, I'm not sure, but, looked at a plea bargain Tennessee offered 2 years ago and how the terms are very, very similar to the ones that they ended up getting. The other thing was a postseason ban. So they've absorbed a lot of these. They have 5 years to stretch out some of the remaining sanctions. So Tennessee ended up as good as they could in considering the circumstances.
So I can't prove this, but I will always believe it, Adam. I think every single member of that Committee on Infractions knew all along there's no way you can give a postseason ban here. I think this is a whole bunch of puffery out of their mouths and this exemplary, and they were so close. And I understand that Tennessee, and you did great reporting on this, you know, like the Attorney General involvement, they did all they could to try to keep that from happening. I just don't buy for a second it was ever going to happen. You can't make the change they did. And in this era, when we don't even care about this stuff anymore, then try to pop someone for a postseason ban. But, you know, it looks, I mean, I think it's a maybe effective, you know, tool for the NCAA. Look, this is what happens. Please cooperate with us. Not that, but the thing is, like, what are we even investigating moving forward? I don't even know. Do you buy my theory or no?
Well, I think that you've got people that all have legal backgrounds on the committee, or most of them do, and they have to follow the letter of the law. And Tennessee's case came, it was played out in sort of a limbo area between two major events. One was the new NCAA constitution that said, hey, we're de-emphasizing postseason bans. If these current players didn't do anything wrong, they shouldn't get a postseason ban. So that's the language and the approach that says to the committee, don't go with a postseason ban. But the problem is the penalty structure in the NCAA has not caught up yet. It's probably going to change this next year. The transformation committee already recommended what to do. The board of directors is like, yeah, we're probably going to do that, but we haven't done it yet. So it's sort of like a judge ruling on a case in a criminal court, and saying, hey, this law is not supposed to be looked at this way. There are already laws that counter this. But then he looks down on his sheet of paper and says, well, what's the sentence for this crime? And the mandatory sentence in pretty much any standard case is 1 to 2 years postseason ban. That's what the sheet of paper says. And when they look at that, they said, well, it says we're supposed to give them a 1 or 2 year postseason ban. We know that's not what the membership wants anymore because we just read the Constitution. So what they did, they found an out and said, if we cite extenuating circumstances, that can push through. So I feel for the committee a little bit. They could have decided this a long time ago, but the legislation was kind of pulling them in two different directions.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Adam, we were just discussing a lot of the work that you did over the weekend. What's been the most, I guess, surprising or shocking revelation to you over the weekend based on what you found?
The text messages, obviously, that's what people responded to the most. Because it's very human, it's very visceral. I always like to know the narratives behind these. I like to find some comedy in them. You know, one of the text messages between Larry Harold, an analyst, and Sean Felton, an assistant coach, was Larry Harold sending something that implicated a violation was going on, and then Sean Felton responding, "Don't send stuff like that to my work phone."
Yeah.
and then Larry Harold responding, "Oh yeah, we shouldn't be putting that kind of stuff on work." But he responded to the work phone in saying that. You know, I like that one. I like the narratives of these. If you ever keep up with a lot of these cases like this, you look back at the SMU case back in the 80s, what usually happens, these things tend to unravel when the power goes from the school or the boosters or whatever to the athletes. And that's what happened here. If you look in the last, you can sit in the text messages. I read it day to day over 3 years, all these text messages. It gets monotonous after a while, but in the last couple of months of it, you start to get staffers getting frustrated with how recruits are taking advantage of the perks. So early in the cheating, you would have, you know, a recruit and his coach or a recruit and his dad or whatever show up and get the free meal under the table and get the free hotel stay off the books. And by the end of it, you've got guys showing up with like 10, 11, 12 people. And there's actually references in there in the text message about people bringing a couple of their cousins to go bowling. And, you know, suddenly an uncle is there eating lobster and steak. And because these recruits know, hey, when I get up from this table and walk out, somebody's going to show up 30 minutes later, pay whatever the tab is. And so I kind of found that comical, and then I found it even funnier that when the recruiting staffers were getting frustrated by that because they saw what was happening.
Yeah, and then, of course, you also had some nice open records revelations on Philip Fulmer, Adam. I have to assume, first of all, Alex French, like you mentioned the story, but it's got to be Alex Grinch, right? Like, it's got to be Alex Grinch. Isn't Alex French like dude from like a 70s sitcom? Maybe he got confused, but that's
got
to be great.
Well,
you got French's
mustard that comes into it a little later in the timeline.
Yes.
So
yes.
Maybe he was foreshadowing. I think it's Alex Grinch. I mean, I haven't talked to Phil Fulmer since this win. I can't imagine he likes his personal notes being put in the newspaper, so to speak. But that's essentially what that looked like. That was to his assistant. It was never sent to Dr. Plowman that we can find. So it looks like he was putting together his notes, his argument for Pruitt, but then listing the cases when he saw the reality of it. And by the end of it, I think he saw, well, I can't send this now because this is over. And it was funny to see sort of that list. A lot of that list makes sense. Others don't. It, you know, you can believe that he's good at feigning ignorance, as the story said. Believe the other one that he just didn't know. I think it is telling that he's listing T. Martin on there, who is the associate head coach for staff that was supposed to be fired for cheating. And then he's got Hugh Freeze on the list as a possible candidate. Beside it says baggage. And that doesn't sound like an athletic director that's about to fire a guy in a major violations case and then go and get people that have done the same or that may have known about those things.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Adam, great stuff all weekend long. Really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. We know you've been busy, and we'll talk to you soon.
right, guys. Good deal.
Absolutely. Adam Sparks, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. We'll take your thoughts. 615-737-1025. We'll get back into DeAndre Hopkins signing with the Tennessee Titans. Coming up next, this is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
One question I want to ask you, Teron, is you mentioned the mayor. You mentioned Rand Carthorne and his ability to connect with players and whatnot. But how big is this for him? This is his first year as a GM and as the Titans GM. But to get a player of Hopkins caliber right now, how big is this moment for Rand Carthorne?
It's huge for Rand Carthorne and for Mike Vrabel and just for the Titans organization, because if they didn't bring a guy like this in, they would have gotten a lot of criticism. They were getting that just as far as the wide receiver position is concerned. You know, why didn't you sign anybody? All these guys, why didn't you sign so-and-so, so-and-so? And they just stayed put. And then you go through the draft. How could you draft a running back in the third round knowing you need receivers? And it just seemed like all along they had a plan. I don't think they had all their eggs in the DeAndre Hopkins basket. But making this move shows that they were willing to play the long game and not press and get out of character and you know, make an extreme deal for a guy who probably wouldn't have been able to come in and have the same impact that Hopkins has. So it's huge from them from that perspective, and I'm sure that they are happy with the wide receiver core even more now.
That was Teron Davenport on ESPN Radio yesterday breaking down the DeAndre Hopkins signing with the Tennessee Titans. We'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Speaking of our phone number, got some tickets to give away to see Gypsy King at T-Pac's Jackson Hall coming up on November the 4th. Be caller number 3, 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025, caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see Gypsy King at T-Pac's Jackson Hall coming up on November the 4th. 615-737-1025. DeAndre Hopkins, the newest member of the Tennessee Titans, a two-year deal worth $26 million, up to $32 million with incentives. $12 million of a base salary this year that can get to $15 million. And, Joe, we'll wait and see what the guaranteed money looks like on the D-Hop deal. But a lot of thoughts already today on our text line on the DeAndre Hopkins front. Now my question is, what does this mean for the team? We've talked about what it could mean for the offense with Treylon Burks and Chigakonkwo and Derrick Henry and how those guys can benefit from it. Obviously, I would imagine Ryan Tannehill is pretty happy that DeAndre Hopkins is coming in. But what does it mean for the bottom line of the Titans? What's the difference now with DeAndre Hopkins on the team as opposed to what the Titans were before? And I said this earlier. I think anybody who thinks that there's some gigantic gap between the Jags and the Titans now is fooling themselves. But what does that mean? What does the win total look like for the Titans now with Hopkins coming in? How many more wins is he worth coming in? I think some of that will have to do with the impact that he has on Burks and what that could look like and the steps that he could take. But we've had a lot of varying opinions today on what the impact of DeAndre Hopkins could be from a win standpoint. Some have said, I mean, it could mean three or four more wins for the Titans. We've had some that say, I just saw one on Twitter a few minutes ago that said, I had the Titans at over under 6.5 before DeAndre Hopkins, and I've got him at over under 6.5 with DeAndre Hopkins now on the team. So some people don't think it's going to make any impact at all.
6.5's low.
I think it's a little low.
What's the proper over-under on the Titans? 7.5?
Well,
8.5?
They were 7.5 before this on the FanDuel Sportsbook. I would be interested to see, and I will look at this right now to see what they are.
Does this move that needle? Because I think I could make a case for them as an 8.5 over-under team. But you know what? Again, you're trying to get betting on both sides. 7.5 is probably the right number because a lot of people still think they're going to be bad. I don't know if this is going to, you know, affect the bottom line, but I think it.
They're still at 7.5.
Okay, still at 7.5. I mean, I think it does affect. It affects the ceiling, right? This could end up being a terrible season still with DeAndre Hopkins, but I think now you can see a path to an actual NFL looking offense that maybe scores in the 20s per game. And gives you a chance to win more than you lose, gives you a chance to win the AFC South. Look, I said it earlier in the show, they could have, with the offensive line coming together beautifully and a lot of other things breaking their way without Hopkins, they could have won the division. I believe that. And with him, they could lose by three games. But the possibilities are much better now. The receiver room makes sense. People slot into proper positions. You had people in spots that you don't want as an NFL team, and now you have potentially two. You know, you got a Hall of Famer who you hope still has a lot left in the tank, and you got a second-year receiver with a lot of ability, and they could be a really good combination now.
Do you believe that Hopkins was the Titans plan the whole time? You know, we heard that clip from TD coming back from the break there of, you know, the Titans playing the long game, and we talked about you getting through the draft, and you took one wide receiver in the seventh round, and who knows, to your point, had they not traded up to get Levis and they had, you know, some picks available to them, where they originally had him slotted, maybe they draft a receiver in the third round.
They basically suggested that, yeah. Too, in the pressers.
Right, and maybe that doesn't change their approach on Hopkins either, even if they drafted somebody. But we heard the criticism. We were part of the criticism after the draft and only taking one wide receiver, and that was a seventh-round guy. Do you think that Hopkins was in the back of their mind the whole time?
Kind of makes sense, right? And especially given the pre-existing relationship, you know, with Vrabel and Hopkins and Kelly and Hopkins. So, yeah, it looks that way. It looks like if it wasn't, this is the plan, stated internal memo, we are doing this, it was at least discussed like this is a real possibility and we should really look into it. Like you said, maybe they end up drafting a receiver and they don't go this route. I could still make the case to do this if you did draft a receiver. You know, although this is a fair amount of money here to invest in DeAndre Hopkins, but at his age, but yeah, it does look that way. And again, I don't think Vrabel promised anything after the draft, but he suggested that, you know, there were other avenues. I mean, basically at that point, what we were talking about Hopkins some, but also, yep, talking about, I don't know, trade for Mike Evans, trade for somebody out there. The fact that they don't give up any draft capital in this is one huge difference between this and what they did 2 years ago.
We had a lot of texts today about what this is going to do for Derrick Henry, maybe opening things up a little bit. Do you buy that this makes things significantly different for Derrick Henry heading into this year? How do you view the Hopkins impact on him specifically?
Yeah, look, more people on the outside who command the attention of a defense has to help you. I do think that Hopkins is going to be a high target, high volume, low yards per catch player this year, who I think he's going to lead the Titans in receptions. And I would go with, like, you know, something like 85 for 1,000, if healthy, if he plays a whole year, something like that, you know, which then I think Burks, more big plays, probably fewer targets because of this, but more opportunities for big plays. And all of it means, again, if Chig and the offense is unpredictable, the OC is good, then, yeah, Derrick Henry should have way fewer instances of just smashing his head into a brick wall like he did last year when he still had a heck of a year given all the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you wouldn't be ecstatic today if you're Derrick Henry, if you're Ryan Tannehill, with this move that's been made. And you brought up an interesting point earlier, like Tannehill, ever since the Cincinnati game, it's been just moves that have been down, made things, whether it's been injury or just moves that have been made by the Titans, it's gotten worse and worse, right? I mean, A.J. Brown leaves, Taylor Wan gets hurt last year, you got Dennis Daly as your starting left tackle, you know, Treylon Burks, you draft in the first round, has a tough time staying on the field last year, Robert Woods comes in, he really doesn't look like he's got much left when he comes in last year. I mean, there's a lot of things that have gone down with the Titans that have not looked good on the offensive side of the ball and that Ryan Tannehill has suffered for. So now you're hoping that DeAndre Hopkins, number one, isn't one of those moves, and he comes in, he's got something left in the tank, and he feels good, he's healthy, all those things. But it's got to be kind of a refreshing day because, look, I thought the Ryan Tannehill press conference after the draft – in the first part of the spring was pretty interesting. I mean, you could sense some frustration from him. And it was, you know, he didn't really necessarily say anything wrong, but you could see it. He was frustrated up there with the way that the draft had played out and the things that had been said and the drafting of a quarterback, all those things, and not taking a wide receiver to the seventh round. So this has got to be a pretty good feeling for Ryan Tannehill to bring a guy of Hopkins caliber in here today. A change of pace.
Yeah, like, it's like, when certain things happen, because even like getting, like you mentioned getting Burks, but that was at the same time of trading Brown, so it's still like a huge net loss, you know? It's like, what? Traded A.J. Brown? But, you know, and it's nobody's fault when like Luan goes down, but then you're sitting there every week and you're like, please, Dennis, please don't let him hit me this
just
hard.
Get in the way of somebody.
Yeah, just like try to like get a hand on him. Get a holding penalty. That's fine. Tackle him. You know, all these things.
Sometimes he did.
Well, yeah, it's true. And they still hit Tannehill. No, I mean, so many things that happened since then just said, your time is coming to a close. We're not helping you. Even after Vrabel said, we got to be great around him, right? It was just one thing after another. What were the reactions in the moment from Tannehill and some of those things? I'm sure, I don't know if he said any swear words, but, you know, I'm sure he was not happy. So I have to think that yesterday when, or whenever he found out, I mean, Vrabel said to McAfee that he, you know, he knew Saturday. Maybe Tannehill knew Saturday too.
Yeah.
Probably not. But whenever he found out, I'd imagine he pumped his fist because the Titans finally did something to actually make things better for him, and it's been a couple years. He used to have tremendous conditions as a quarterback of this team, and they deteriorated really in an incredible way. And now with the skill group, again, remember Tyjae Spears. Kyle Phillips is back. Burks, a lot of excitement. What was the word? Superstar?
Superstar.
Traylon Burks. And now you throw in Hopkins. Man, you got to feel decent about that. You still are begging the guys up front to not let, you know, to not let the other big guys hit you. And you don't know how that's going to go. But you got a chance. And the new OC is a big part of that, too.
It was ESPN flashed up a graphic earlier of DeAndre Hopkins and his career touchdown passes. And it was DeAndre Hopkins touchdown receptions, Mike Vrabel touchdown reception, and then like the rest of the Titans receiving room.
Nice.
Like Hopkins has 72 career touchdowns, and this includes the playoffs. Vrabel has 12, and then like, you know, Chris Moore's got like 7 or 8 or something like that. Like it's like the next closest guy. It's hilarious. It's just like Hopkins 72, the head coach Mike Vrabel 12, and here's the rest of the Titans receiving corps.
Yeah,
so they just increased their touchdowns in the receiving room by a lot.
Force multiplied. Yeah. It's amazing to think of Vrabel with 12 touchdowns.
It really is.
But, yeah, look, you go from you're in contention for worst receiver, like it or not, you're in contention, and now you are no longer. I don't know where they would be now, but, I mean, to me, they're like middle of the pack.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the only real problem area now for this team is offensive line.
Right, and that kind of could be deal. The problem that undoes them. We'll see. And look, you know, Hopkins may go out there in the second quarter of the New Orleans game, and all of a sudden we've got an injury problem again. But right now on paper, I agree. Like, the offensive line is the only thing right now that I'm looking at that just scares the daylights out of you for the Titans. And before today, it was the receiving room too.
Exactly. So now you just have one terrifying room.
That's right. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. We will do that next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Wasn't in the position that maybe they thought he would be when they signed him, in part because he dealt with an injury that slowed his progress. And now, boom, you've got both those guys that are really on the spot. So I think, yes, you've got to have some concern because Bio did a good job and he was kind of next in line. And now they're in a tougher spot from a depth standpoint. So it's put them in quite a bind. And
Crispy's like, hey, it's not the first time you've been on the floor in a bar. Oh, it is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. God bless you, Nick Keiser. Going back in time to Rex Road, breaking the chair over at Pete and Terry's over at Bridgestone Arena.
That started, and I'm like, wait a minute. What is Jim Wyatt talking about?
That's maybe my favorite interview of all time. We knocked him off the air, and he came back, and he's like, well, it kind of sounded like there's some sort of catastrophe going on. Jim, there was.
And with the curb music, very nice. Nice touch there. I almost don't even know what to do now. But actually, I think this music is fitting for what I'm about to do, because I know that we just went back into D-Hop, and we'll go back. And so we're bouncing around wildly. But I have a little bit more to say about Jeremy Pruitt.
Okay.
And I mentioned earlier that, that I went through the 127-page confractions and document, as a lot of people did over the weekend. It was quite an enjoyable thing. I don't want this part to be forgotten, because it truly is incredible. Now, I don't know that this beats, Spark's story on Niedermeyer and, I love the nightlife, I got to boogie. Like, leave me alone, NCAA. It's just amazing stuff, man. But this is pretty good too. Okay. So this is, all right. I have to, yes. Okay. So, Jeremy Pruitt and his wife, of course, she did not get named in this. No show called, former compliance staffer, yes, by the way, at Florida State.
Yes.
So, they met while he was at Florida State, learning from Jimbo Fisher the proper methods of compliance with NCAA regulations.
Yes.
All of it's amazing. So, here's a quote from the report. Quote, in the head coach's written submissions and at the infractions hearing, the head coach and his wife stated that they operated primarily in cash and routinely withdrew large amounts of cash in their bank account. This practice, they explained, this practice derived from their rural upbringings, where many of the people their family associated with did not have credit cards and carried cash with them at all times. Thus, they asserted there was nothing remarkable or unusual about the cash withdrawals. Like, basically, they're just like bartering goats out there. Like, what? It's just incredible, man. Like, the crap that the people came up with in this is just fantastic. It reminds me, since last week we introduced Nick to Toonses, I wanted to introduce him to Unfrozen K-Man Lawyer. Nick, play that clip for us, will you?
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm just a caveman. I fell in some ice and later got thawed out by some of your scientists. Your world frightens and confuses me. Sometimes the honking horns of your traffic make me want to get out of my BMW and run off into the hills or whatever. Sometimes when I get a message on my fax machine, I wonder, did little demons get inside and type it? I don't know. My primitive mind can't grasp these concepts. But there is one thing I do know. When a man, like my client, slips and falls on a sidewalk in front of a public library, then he is entitled to no less than $2 million in compensatory damages.
There we go. It just, I don't know why that came to mind, but it's just amazing. All of it is. But I want to reiterate, I truly, genuinely feel some sympathy for Jeremy Pruitt in his career. Like, his career, in my opinion, should not be blown up from this. You know what? Like, all of this amounted to like $60,000 over several years, or not several, over like, 2+ years, it amounted to about $60,000 in inducements. It was the restaurants, nails,
hundreds of infractions.
Well, it was more than 200 infractions, 18 level one. So I get it if we care about that, because the NCAA wants us to think that's huge. That's a big deal. $60,000, some hotels, some meals. I mean, this didn't even get into like actual payment, right?
Yeah.
This didn't even get into the bidding wars that also happen and have happened in college football and now happen pretty much openly, and everybody's fine with it because they should be fine with it. To me, it's archaic to put this kind of punishment on Jeremy Pruitt. And Sparks made a good point. Like, it is, you're in between. But when you state what was stated about the change in the Constitution, to me, you don't worry about what the sentencing guidelines say in the old way. It's just not, it doesn't matter. And I really genuinely hope that Jeremy Pruitt finds his way back to college football, because he just did the same crap that so many other people have done in so many other ways in this sport. His crimes were losing, number one. But also, there's some stuff in this report about people worried about retaliation from him and things like that. And I mean, Jeremy Pruitt made some enemies in his time.
There's
in
no
Knoxville
question
too.
About that.
So those two things And look, that's on him, okay? All of it's on him, the sloppiness and everything. But again, the idea that right now in this era, this guy has a 6-year show cause when all of this stuff is nothing but entertainment to me, it's like there's no one was hurt from this. No one was hurt from all the, you know, these meals being paid for, these hotel rooms being paid for.
Especially in the current landscape of college athletics, right, and the immediate aftermath of all this.
Like, how can you look at it now in the same way?
You can't. I mean, I don't think. But they are. And that part of it I do. And look, I said this earlier. Like, his career in college football, is it over? I don't know. Like, is he just going to sit there for 6 years because nobody wants to hire him because he's going to be suspended for a year? Does somebody take the plunge at that point and bring him on staff? I don't know. I don't know what it's going to look like for Jeremy Pruitt. But, I mean, you know, obviously right now he's got a level of toxicity around him that other people aren't going to want to have at this point. So I do wonder, like, number one, does anybody take that plunge? Number two, if somebody does and they want him on their staff at some point, when does that happen? Is it next year? Is it the year after? Like, when do you do that?
Nick Saban's the greatest coach of all time. He's untouchable. I mean, he built a program where, you know, I would have think that he wouldn't do some of the stuff Jeremy Pruitt did. He's going to retire at some point here and have this have the greatest program ever in the sport. Suck it up and hire the guy to be an analyst, and then you have a year of suspension, and then you help him rehabilitate.
I thought we were getting back into the Jeremy Pruitt future head coach at Alabama conversation that we were into a couple years ago.
Oh, remember that? Yeah. Tennessee fans were like, you hands off.
Yeah. Tuskers. Stay away, Alabama.
Stay away from our guy. We're about to start biting people in the butt, per Philip Fulmer. Not like Nick Saban. How much stuff did Jeremy Pruitt do for Nick Saban over the years? He should get him into the coach rehabilitation program, and over time he can be a linebacker's coach somewhere. Maybe he can be a D coordinator. He should not be have his career completely destroyed because of this. I'm sorry.
Come back to the NFL. He's with the Giants. Let's go be with the
I don't know why he left the
Texans.
NFL.
I got a text that says, while driving through West Virginia, I looked over into the pickup beside me and 100% saw an unfrozen caveman lawyer. It's from an unnamed texter on the text line. A lot of love for the unfrozen caveman lawyer on the text line.
I mean, it's good stuff, right?
It is.
Introducing Nick Kieser to the SNL classic days, baby.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get his thoughts on the DeAndre Hopkins signing with the Titans. That is next. Make sure you tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tomorrow at 6:35 on 94.9 The Fan. Sounds taking on the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, the AAA affiliate of the Miami Marlins. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.